Off the Ball Rugby.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'd love to work with Andy Farrell. I think it would be amazing. I like everything that he stands for. I like his drive. I'd like to see him up close.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehu and Paul Murphy.
Welcome along. It is that time. It is the Hurling Pod. It's a fallow weekend in some ways, but we're going to be talking about the lower division finals and some of the talk coming out of them as well. During the week, 20 minutes, all it took for the sand tickets to go for Porkycueve for the Division 1A and 1B finals. The ground is fully sold out ahead of those games next week. No 65-metre lines, though, in Inniskeen for the Division 2 final. The Division 4 final managers you've probably seen over the weekend, both hitting out at the venues selected for the deciders on the weekend just gone by. Sean Baldwin of Fermanagh particularly, he reckons the lower division teams should be treated with, what he said, a bit of respect, given that the Football League finals were all at Croke Park and the weekend just gone by. And Shane O'Donnell, he was back, it seemed, and now he's not. Very much cold water put on those reports during the week that the Hurler of the Year is back in non-contact training with Clare, and it looks like Brian Hayes' injury isn't too bad for Cork either. Paul Murphy, how are you?
Good now, lads. How are you?
James Skell, you've buried the word sorry. The word sorry will not be used on this podcast today.
No. The people have spoken will.
They bloody have.
They want us to be our true selves and don't be apologetic for it. So whatever, however bad I was before, I'm going to get worse.
So there's no breaks. It's just you with your foot in the accelerator. That's it. Not looking in the rearview mirror. Done.
Do you remember the meme with the Joker in The Dark Knight and he's just driving the car all over the place and head out the window?
That's the
kind of mood I'm in right now. Let's roll.
If you're wondering what we're talking about, this is the feedback from last week. I think we had the most amount of comments we've ever had on the audio version of the podcast, and it was quite busy on the video version that went up on YouTube as well. And people were saying, right, the one thing you need to do, lads, back yourselves. Stop saying you're sorry for going off on tangents. Sorry for saying that you're getting away from the hurling or whatever else. The word sorry is now banned from this podcast for the next hour.
It used to be just an acknowledgement, though. That's really kind of what it was, that you were just acknowledging, I'm gone off here. I might be back in about 10 minutes back onto the topic, but I think that was more the way it was used, but it's appreciated, in fairness.
The feedback for the first 5 or 6 minutes last week was actually really good. We had the OG back onto us again, Tiago Silva, who was saying that he enjoyed it. He said it was great crack. He enjoyed the idea of Murph trying to use two stones as opposed to a piece of flint to try and start a fire. He enjoyed the jams on the eggs.
Let myself down there.
I would say the members' pod last week probably went into directions we weren't expecting. We talked about films, we talked about TV, we talked about being a parent, we talked about Skell being a better coach than he was a player and why he feels he's that way, encouraging young players. And then we got two or three emails in, which were really positive, and they've asked us to actually make the members pod free from last week. So I'm definitely considering doing that now. Try that balancing act between if you're a member and you're paying for this, I want to make sure you're getting something a bit special. But like, now that a week is gone, maybe that's long enough to say, hey, you can have this for free. So it seems to me, Murph, people enjoy the chat talk.
They do. And the other side is that I mentioned my cousin last week who brought up the topic about the boss. And sure, he didn't hear it. And next thing, a message went into the Murphy family WhatsApp group there. So now he's intrigued as to how it was brought up and how incriminated he was. And I think he texted me then this evening and said, my other problem while we're at it is that players are taking too many steps with the ball. And so I think he's going to go back and say, right, I want to hear how this was framed. So absolutely. Good idea, though, in fairness, giving someone a past member pod that is now banished to the archives just to see what shite we talk.
Yeah, I think it's pretty timeless as well. I don't think we did any hurling talk with the exception of,
I don't think
should a boss be less than 18 inches, I think was the only conversation we had. So
Yeah, and there's no point in trying to squeeze something out of it that's not there. Like, I mean, it was after the review of last week's hurling, there was no point in going, let's try and do anything mad here and try and, I suppose, force a topic that's not there for the week that's in it.
Yeah, exactly. And we will look forward to the 1B and 1A finals on this one. Skell, when it comes to the sellout on this, so 20 minutes, they said, for the stand tickets. Now, I think some were held back for season ticket holders and the county board's got a very small allocation, but the Ticketmaster was gone. And then Porkycueve was sold out within, I think, about a day and a half. All the tickets were gone. There's going to be more people at Porkycueve than there were at all four of the football finals that were in Croke Park during the week, and sold out a week and a bit before the game even takes place. This is quite remarkable, isn't it? Is this just the nature of it being Tip and Cork supporters being crazy, or why do you reckon this is sold out so quickly?
There's a couple of reasons, I suppose. The two finals being played together is one. Offaly being involved. Offaly are notorious at the moment for travelling really, really well. Same with Cork. Like, I suppose the last three Cork games have been in Parkcleave have been north of 20,000, which is, to be fair, lads, unheard of. It was never heard in my time or in our time. It was never heard that a standard league game would have 20,000 in Parkcleave. And just to note, actually, from talking to members of the Galway County Board, they said, you know, it's different. The gate is different in leagues. You get a share. You get like a 50-50 share regardless of where you go. So, for example, Galway going to Cork would get a 50% share of what's made available, which is huge. So their most profitable game this year was them going to Cork, which is fantastic. Their two most profitable games, right, were going to Limerick and going to Cork. So if we keep going down there, that'll be great. we keep going down there. But I'm not fully in agreement with the two matches being on the same day, same stadium. I thought they should have been separated a bit. I would have liked to, personally, would have liked to have seen Offaly Waterford in Saturday, and then let's say Cork and Chip on Sunday. Now, would that affect the crowds? I don't think so. I still think if you had Cork and Chip on its own, standalone game, that would be sellout. And it's amazing to get, because hurling's hot at the moment. Cork are very hot at the moment. There's, you know, like if Cork travel well, it means the sport in Cork is moving very, very nicely, which it is. But like, I'm very much looking forward to it as a neutral, because I want to see what Offaly are like in a big pitch, a really big pitch now at the minute with a fast ball. And then it's just a showdown of Cork and Chip, potentially minus in Brian Hayes. I'm not sure how bad the injuries. It looks like he's out. He's heading back for Championship, which means the goal machine, which turns little things a little bit, but not a lot. So yeah, look, hurling's hot. Keep it hot. What happens in football? I don't care. Don't give a shit. Like, that's what that says. It does nothing for me. So I don't even know who's playing today. Straight up, I don't know who's playing today. If you ask me who's in the league final, I'd have to hazard a guess.
Go on, have a go. Go on.
I would say Kerry and Dublin.
Oh, so close.
Yeah, 50% right.
Yeah. Kerry and Mayo, but Kerry will.
Kerry and Mayo. And then Division 2, I couldn't name you one team in Division 2.
Oh, they played it yesterday, so you should have probably seen the result.
Oh, Jesus. Donegal?
No. Donegal, Division 1.
Division 1. Jesus.
This is a thought experiment that's worth it. So go on.
Donegal. It's not Donegal. Who else would be in Division? Kildare?
No, Kildare were beaten in the Division 3 final by Offaly today. Had to get that in.
And might I say, while Skell is thinking, first goal, Offaly scored. Top corner. So Skell, that is worth looking at. First goal, Offaly scored. I think it was the first score of the game. Might have been the second. It was fairly early on.
Second, I think, yeah.
I'd say he's on about between the 14 to 21-yard line, pumps it into the top corner. It's a
you mean to tell me a lad on the 21 actually went for goal. He didn't fist it over the bar.
It's a fair point. Yeah, I'll give you that. There was a lot of fisting the balls over the bar in the main game, let's say, in the Division 1.
The Division 1 final, it was a plague.
Yeah.
Who won that one?
Kerry.
Kerry won by 6 against Mayo just a little while ago. The Jack Bryant goal, you'll appreciate it when you see it, Skell, purely from the goalkeeper's point
Jack
of view.
Jack Bryant.
So, yeah. Have a look up there, but have a look
at
the Kildare goalkeeper. So Bryant kind of hits it with the laces on his right boot, but it like pings right into the top corner like a rocket and then comes back out. The goalkeeper doesn't even move. And I always appreciate when that happens. The goalkeeper just looks and goes, I'm not getting to that.
Yeah, there's no point.
It was one of those ones, I'd say, from my memory now from watching it, I'd say it started just about the height of the crossbar, and the only time it came down beneath the crossbar was just as it hit the top corner. It was that sort of thing where it was like, keeper just going, whatever's happening here, I'm not getting near this, yo. I was class.
So did the keeper not move, no?
Keeper didn't stir.
So that means if he made an attempt to save it right and didn't get near it, it looks way worse then for him. Just let it off. If it's going in, just let it go.
sometimes you just have to be resigned to what's happened. You're like, this is
I'm done here, I'm screwed.
The Division 2 final, by the way, was Monaghan against Roscommon. So it was Skell's neighbours getting downed all over the place. But
I thought Roscommon were Division 1.
Well, they are next year.
Yeah, they won it.
No, they lost to Monaghan.
Jeez. Okay, so 2-0 for 2-0.
Not a great weekend for Connacht in a more general sense, but there you go. But just to put in context, how many people are going to that final in Parkcleave? So it's going to be 45,000-ish. The highest attendance we had for a hurling league final in recent times was just under 45,000, which was 2019. But that was at Croke Park, which was Limerick against Waterford, which doubled up with Mayo and Kerry, as it all comes around full circle, in the Football League final. So as a hurling-only final, this is the best attendance they've had since before COVID. So it's going to be
great.
pretty crazy. Like the only one thing is Murph John Milan was making the argument. He was saying Waterford Offaly should have probably went to Nolan Park because he reckoned there'd be a decent attendance from both of those teams. And maybe there was an argument to let Cork and Tip have their day at Páirc Uíomh and play the other game away from that. I don't know. I mean, to me, it helps the spectacle having it as a double header, but was there an argument for moving it to Nolan Park or having it in Nolan Park, I should say, rather than tickets going to town?
I think it's kind of a 50-50 one. Like, I haven't heard anybody complain about this going to Páirc Uíomh. I think the Offaly bandwagon is up and going in terms of people are kind of happy enough to travel at the moment. And it kind of feels like this one's a bit mad to say. Maybe I'm getting a bit carried away in myself now, but the clocks are going forward. Summertime hurling kind of feels like it's coming around. Those teams are all in a good place. Like, Tipperary supporters are delighted. They would have taken your hand off if they were in this position at the start of the league. They said, yeah, absolutely. Cork, leave it so. They're gone mad. They're absolutely up and going.
They're gone
They're gone mad. Yeah. No, as in, they're gone mad. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Gone mad.
Cork are gone. Absolutely batshit, right? So it's great. It's fantastic. Waterford, after being beaten by Carlow in the first round, eventually got their, you know, campaign up and going. And then you have Offaly. So I think all sets of supporters, to be honest, are happy enough to go down. There's two arguments here. One is, I think, that, Will, the argument you made is very important. Like, kind of getting those attendances back up and showing that some of the attendances have been very flat, like even just across general league, across even championship, Leinster finals, these things, you know, outside of Munster finals and Munster championship, they've been flat. So I don't think it's any harm in that we've now gone back to, like you said, a pre-COVID attendance at a league final, like fantastic. I think if the appetite wasn't there, and like these are things you can judge in the run into a final, once you haven't figured out, you can go, well, we have Offaly and Waterford, and you can kind of make a judgment based off either both teams have been on the road, X, Y, Z, whatever you think, and go, actually, do you know what, for this one, this year, we'll go Offaly and Waterford, Nolan Park, grand, and we'll separate it. But I actually do think the kind of the mood was right, and I'm open to be corrected on that one. That's not me apologising, but I'm open to be corrected on that, at if supporters think, because Cork is a trick, and we spoke about it, what I say, last year, wasn't there something brought to Páirc Uíomh and people were kicking up a fuss? Was it Clare and Limerick? Clare and Limerick were brought to Páirc Uíomh and people were kicking up a fuss over that.
That's right.
But I'm actually happy enough. I actually think this one, I'm delighted to see tickets selling out for a league final so quickly. I think it's brilliant. So I think it's fair to give credit when credit is due. I think they got this one right in terms of right place, right time. Yeah.
I also think, by the way, you got to make peace with Páirc Uíomh. So yeah, you got to leave a bit of extra time, and you got to accept the fact that going down around the side of the river is going to be slow. It's going to be a little bit slow coming back out. Better off park in the city, stroll down, or I think you can get a bus down towards the area there as well. Except your car is not going to park very close to the ground. Except you need to leave a little bit of extra time, and you'll have a lovely day at Páirc Uíomh. I think people kind of need to get past that a little bit. I can understand why Limerick and Clare supporters are, say, if it does end up, say, as that combo, they wouldn't particularly want to trek all the way to Cork for a game. Mm. But when I see how many of the Munster Championship games, particularly, I know some people are annoyed about the, again, mini jump in the ticket prices again for the Munster Championship this year. But like, when I see it scale, that quite a few of these games look like they're going to sell out mega quickly. My first thought is, like, they know that the product is incredibly hot in Munster right now. And I'm sure,
of course it is.
I know you're only an honorary Leinster man. People in Leinster would love if the interest levels were the same for people going to games. But the reality is, Munster Championship has never felt hotter than it is right now.
Well, it is. Like, I suppose when you assess Munster, like, it's basic economics, supply versus demand. You know, the supply is not exactly there, but the demand is huge. You know, like, I fully believe, let's say, if you were in Munster final with, let's say, for example, Cork and Limerick, you'd fail Croke Park. In terms of, if that was in Munster, for example, I know it's not, don't get me wrong, but if that was in Munster, you'd feel Quebec. That's what the interest is in counties at the moment. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'd look with an element of jealousy from being an honorary Leinster man as you, and look across the Munster and think the product is just fantastic, because every team competes, the pace is class, the supporters make it all an occasion. And you were mentioning Páirc Uíomh there. Yes, it has its difficulties, don't get me wrong, but I actually, as a Galway man, we have a long way to go down. I love going down to that stadium because there's something very grand about it. You know what I mean? It's just... Yeah. It's built fantastic. The area is lovely. It's a hive activity. It's promoting. I get the sense it just promotes movement. There's people all over the stadium. You know, I'm not saying hurling supporters, but just general public. The way in there, it seems like there's loads of coffee shops and, you know, fish and chip shops, all them kind of places. So it's awful energy, great energy. So I don't mind going down there. It's nearly like it's an occasion, regardless of what the actual occasion is. So I'd say if you're an Offaly person, you won't be looking at the travel going, geez, we've 3 hours of travel here. You're saying we're going down to a national final into a savage stadium, onto a savage pitch, following our team once again. You know, if you rewound maybe 3 or 4 years ago, Will, and said, wouldn't you like to go to Park Queen for a national final? You'd take your hand off, you know. Mm. So I don't think there's anybody cribbing and crying here. Same with Watford. Watford were kind of in the doldrums, to say, of recent, you know, of late. And it's to get back to the top, it'll take baby steps, you know. And this is one big baby step. If you get into a national final, win it, and then you head into a Munster Championship in a really good place as a Watford player. Yeah. Really good place. It just sets you up. And these teams, there's going to be no shadow teams as far as I'm concerned. This is pre-championship preparation, albeit the final. So it's going to be a hot occasion. Looking forward to it.
Again, I'm not going to use the S word here because I make no apologies to any Cork fans from during the week who are telling us to try and bottle it now at this stage when it comes to the hype towards the Cork team. There's no way. The genie is out of the bottle. It's not going back in.
I actually love that. It was brilliant. I hadn't seen that in a while now. Where it's like, oh, hold on. No. And it was like, there was a good few comments going, no, clearly, Clare and Limerick. It's like lads were terrified of us jinxing. We're not going to jinx it, lads. We're not.
The more
whatever will be, will be.
The more they say not to do it, right, the more I am going to do it.
Oh, lean in hard. Lean in hard.
Just to frighten the shit out of them.
There's a good few of them here. I was just scrolling through. It was like, it seemed a lot of the comments on last week where people going, no, I'm a Cork supporter, but I'm not a cocky Cork supporter, versus other people going, well, you should be cocky about Cork. Look at the way you're going at the moment.
It was the biggest reverse psychology, like, going on in the comments there. Lads were hopping off each other, but like bigging each other up. So like lads were going, oh no, Cork definitely have it won. Yeah, I'm a Limerick sport. Yeah, Cork definitely have it. And then Cork lads are trying to play it down. I was like, Jesus, this. Whereas if you get to the All-Ireland semi-final, lads will chop our heads off when we start saying that, oh no, Cork aren't going to win. Lads will go mad. So,
and then you've got Chris Dalton 9849 from last week on the YouTube, who just kind of went, I'm just going to drop a bomb and walk away, because everyone was arguing underneath his comment. He said, Limerick still number one, Cork number two. Limerick are much tougher than Cork mentally. Cork, though talented, are a soft touch.
That's the fish operation.
He knew what he was at.
What he did, Murph? He pulled the pin in the grenade, threw it, and ran.
Walked away. If you're given Batman analogies there, it's like when Heath Ledger, should I say, blows up the hospital. You know, he's walking away, he's not even looking, and he just blows up and walks off. That's around Chris Dalton heading off there now.
Put out the podcast before League Sunday happened, so I watched the end of the Republic of Ireland Bulgaria game after we finished the pod. I was sticking the pod up at the same time while I was watching the end of the match, and I saw League Sunday was going to start in its normal time. There's a lot of people who are annoyed about the lack of hurling that was shown, yet I can kind of understand that last week they had to kind of show the end of the regular section of the Football League because there was so much at stake. And we always knew that the hurling was going to end up being on quite late. The problem was there weren't cameras in some of the Division 1A games. So I don't know, Skelly, how you feel about this. So Limerick and Wexford, I have but read reports of what happened in that game. I didn't get to see it, even though I stayed up till whatever it was. I think it was nearly midnight before the hurling started. Would there be a Division 1 football game not shown? Does James O'Connell 8417 have a fair point?
Does a Division 1 football game not be shown? I don't think so, Will. Now, I know in the same breath, someone is going to come back with a bit of evidence to say it happened. I can understand, right? I mightn't like it or agree with it, but I can understand why they wouldn't show the two games, i.e. Tip and Clare and Limerick and Wexford. They were essentially dead rubbers. The final pairing was decided after the Saturday night, so I get it. You know, I also get that League Sunday have a job to cram in all the games. I get it, especially on final day. So I'm giving them a pass in this one. I do. I also think that they assess numbers in terms of viewership and say that football, because it's covered geographically more by more counties, takes precedence, takes priority. So that's why they probably pay more attention to it. But I'm not going to give out with this one. I'm going to save my giving out for another while, because something will pop up throughout the course of the year, which I'll have to give out about. But in this instance, I'm going to say they made probably a constructive decision. So I'll leave it there.
I don't know. Where are you on this, Murph? I'll put my cards on the table. I feel for the producers on this, because naturally they're going to go, let's show the one game that mattered, which was Cork and Galway. And even if it was from the Saturday, you package it up and you have that good to go. And you talk about the fact the league final's coming up, and maybe touch on, as they did, some of the instance in the Offaly Waterford game. And that's the kind of hurling coverage for the night. Yeah. And you don't go show the stuff that maybe wasn't on TV. But there's part of me that wonders, surely there should be just a little highlights package of what happened. I would like to have seen yeah, Tipperary's rally at the end of the game against Clare, I would like to have seen. Apparently there were some great scores in the Wexford Limerick game, which I just haven't seen.
Yeah, for me, there's an overlap there, 2 points that I think both are true. There should have been some camera somewhere picked up Limerick and Offaly. I mean, it's Division 1. Okay, it might be a dead rubber. It's Division 1 in the hurling. But it also, I feel, goes back to an argument that we spoke about a few weeks ago, where there's other smaller broadcasters like sitting around the table wanting to pick up the scraps, and they're not being let. But you don't have cameras even being sent to Limerick and Wexford, whereas another broadcaster, and I use Clubber as the example, would go down and show the full match. And if people want to go there and watch it, fine. But if RT aren't going to show anything on it, that's for me is where discrepancy happens. And I know what the conversation will be is that if you're to ask this of the GA, and this is not the GA bashing either, if you're to ask this of the GA, they say, well, no, we give out contracts each year, and you know, RT get X and TG Carr get Y. And my question would be, well, why are they so restrictive in this? If this, like, for example, if there is matches that pop up that are not shown anywhere, why aren't those covered by the smaller broadcasters that want to show them?
Dare I suggest as well, Murph, GAA Plus. Now that the GAA own that as an entire entity, I don't know if the commercial argument is there quite as much as it was previously.
Mm.
Why not just turn around and say, right, well, we're going to use GAA Plus in a constructive way. Like, we saw the last round of the football last week, and it was so exciting, the fact that TG Carr were able to YouTube games, they were able to show various different bits of footage. Why not, if it's a night like last Saturday night, where there's one game on the TV, GAA Plus could have shown the other two?
Yeah, well, there you are. That's exactly it. It's just about aiming for for a broadcast system or a broadcast schedule that's fit for purpose. And I think it does overlap with the points that the Fermanagh manager and the Louth manager made as well over the weekend, where it's a case of just when these things happen, you go, are we really doing the best? Like, these are the adult hurling teams. Like, we're talking about the underage structures and trying to get clubs and counties to have underage teams. And I know football are probably talking about something similar, but particularly in hurling, revitalizing it. If you can't see it and it's not on as regular, or it's just a case that Division 1 matches can't be seen, you know, like, I think that touches on just the kind of the, it's not priority quite a bit of the time. And that's the problem. And I think it's fair to raise that point. I know it's consistently raised, but I think if you don't raise it, it'll only get worse. And I think that's the next thing. And again, another group of people I think will feel very unsatisfied is Carlo. Like, I mean, Carlo got nothing at all. And that is, like, let's say you could say the argument, and I agree with Skehill. I do know exactly what he's saying, that they have to prioritize for that night. That was prioritized. Okay, fine. Carlo essentially got no coverage over those few weeks. Now, what they will say is that against Waterford, they showed their two goals and Waterford's goal. But that was through cameras from the stats, lads, which is like, that's the only way Carlo got onto it. So I think you could, there's a good few people that just feel a bit disenfranchised there, that you go, you know, we need more coverage. We're not getting the coverage. But again, I will say that, I do agree with Skettle's point also. And I think both can be true at the same time, of saying that for that particular time frame on Sunday night, I understand why hurling was second, and I understand why football was prioritised. But I don't think that justifies not having a camera at all at Limerick and Wexford, when Wexford actually go and beat Limerick.
Yeah, I wonder if there'll be more 1B covers next year when Clare are in Division 1B as well.
Well, there will, yeah. Automatically.
The reality is.
Tell me, do sponsors, I'm only asking now, it's not a load of questions, Will, but you're in the business, right? So League Sunday are doing their...
I love how open-ended and potentially slanderous that was.
Yeah. I'll mind my words.
In the dirty business there.
I'll mind my words. Would there ever be any external influencers in terms of deciding what gets shown, when gets shown? You know, so Murph has made this point a few times about the likes of Clubber, they say, other entities that could possibly cover games, and it's never seemed to be allowed. Is this like a closed shop? Like, if you get the rights for the GAA Championship and other leagues, you say nobody else is allowed, regardless of how many games you cover?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. So at the moment, they've split the league rights up. And again, I'm sure someone will correct me if I have this wrong, but I think it's essentially Saturday are RTE's picks for the league, and Sunday TG Carr have their picks, where they'll show matches on the Sunday. Now, they have crisscrossed a little bit when it came to, say, rugby commitments, or if in TG Carr's case, the ladies' football season kind of bleeds a little bit into their coverage on Saturday sometimes. And so TG Carr have had a few Saturday matches over the last while. But that's generally how that works out. They're in blocks of fixtures for Saturday and Sunday, is the way the league fixtures are done out currently. There's no reason that the GAA couldn't reform that agreement or couldn't potentially make changes to it. And then for the various championships, they have done them in a package. And I think, top of my head, I think we're in year two of a five-year package at the moment. Now, the changing force in all this is GAA Plus moving from GAA Go. My suspicion would be we still don't have the GAA Go fixtures fully confirmed at this stage. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation. I think I've heard that Clare might be on GAA Plus twice in the hurling during the Munster, so prepare for the Cork treatment of why are we always on GAA Plus in a few weeks' time. But the press conference they were due to have a few weeks ago didn't take place, so I haven't seen the actual fixtures or the justification around picking them. I would say the only external factor that comes in all this scale is the GAA Plus side of things, whereby they're still going to be looking to sell subscriptions. And the reality is, if they're following the business model that they were from the last few years, even if RTE aren't a 50-50 partner anymore, they will want to pick three or four high-profile games to put behind a paywall to ensure that people watch it on GAA Plus. And naturally, that disincentivizes any idea of, say, opening it up to other broadcasters coming in to potentially fill the gap. You want to keep your rights reasonably exclusive, so therefore they're worth more and people will still sign up to watch them. So that's why they clamp down on some things where they see footage online, which is being shared by people in the championship, that you know, cease and desist will happen sometimes when people stick them up.
And you might think, we're year two. You were in year two of five.
I think so. It'll be
a continuation of saying for the next 3 years.
I'd imagine so, yeah. Unless it's you know, chatted about and reformed. But I would say that's fairly unlikely because, again, these are high-profile deals that take place and take a long time to negotiate. Generally, it's about a year before they're signed. And I only know that because I'd be privy enough to what happens on the radio side of the agreements as opposed to the TV. I obviously didn't sit in the room when any of the TV agreements were being bashed out. But the reality is that once Sky Sports left the market, I believe there were some preliminary talks with Virgin Media, but Virgin Media wanted everything to be ready to go. They didn't want to be the production company themselves. They wanted to take the footage and maybe do the studio around it. And then BBC came in as part of their new deal and have added some extra games to it. And then outside of that, really, it's what was GAA Go, now GAA Plus and RTE carve everything up. So,
right.
Look, we'll see how it goes over a while. I wouldn't be expecting massive change, though. But the hurling thing is interesting. You've obviously touched on this already, Murph. I just want to read the quotes that have come from the Louth hurling manager, Trevor Hilliard, who was part of the winning team in the Division 4 final, and also Joe Baldwin from Fermanagh, who I think is going to be talking off the ball later in the week. He has kind of a mad story as well, where Joe got sick a few years ago and was straight back onto the sideline and gave us a very interesting interview when he sat down with Owen Sheehan. I think the plan is for OTB to try and talk to him later in the week, and this, I'm sure, will come up as well. So both managers were very unhappy with the game being fixed for what they felt was not the right venue here. So you've got the league football finals, which are on at Croke Park. This game was on in Trua. And I think people probably saw the pitch. And Sean Baldwin afterwards, and we saw both Trevor Hilliard and Sean Baldwin were both interviewed. Fermanagh Herald have got the video, which is doing the rounds at the moment. And Sean Baldwin said, quote, "Fermanagh and Louth are united in this. Both teams gave a good exhibition of hurling, but it was really difficult conditions. There was nothing between the teams. At the end of the day, though, why was this game not in Croke Park? These players work equally hard as other teams across the land. It's really disappointing for both teams. The football finals are in Croke Park, and so should the hurling," end quote. Down manager Owen Sheehan as well wasn't happy about the Division 2 final being fixed for Inniskeen. He spoke about it last week. Down would go on to beat Kildare in that Division 2 final, and people probably saw the pictures that went up during the weekend as well, where there were no 65 metre lines on the pitch. They were marked by flags. Like, whatever about the Croke Park issue, Murph? Jesus. The idea that you go to a venue for a Division 2 final, and I know it's the third flight in hurling, but for flags to be determining where 65s are hit from, is like, that's not good enough.
Jesus. No, it's not. And if your argument is that for a third division, as you're saying, the fourth division of football was in Croke Park, but like, there's no 65s on the third division of hurling. So like, I think just that automatically, there's no justification for not having the 65s on there. I don't know, like, I don't know how long that game was fixed for, that they knew it was going to be there. I don't know how much responsibility.
They were delayed enough in picking the venues as well. So from memory, I think we had all of them except for the Division 3 and 4 fixtures by Monday afternoon, because I remember seeing it. And then after, I actually, I tweeted them out because generally I tend to tweet the fixtures out when they're confirmed and whatever else. And it was only after I tweeted it, someone had DM'd me and said, did you notice there's no fixed venue for that Division 4 final? So I think it was actually later in the week when Truro was picked as the venue. And to be fair to the Loud manager, he actually thanked Truro for hosting it and said we're not having a go at, you know, the fact that the club were able to put this on. But was making a point. So Hawkfield was the Division 3 final, Mayo and London, by the way. But he was making a point that, again, it was short notice and it was a setup that was far from ideal.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. So then, like, I mean, in fairness, thanking the club, which is, that's the thing, yeah. You don't run into the club and kind of say that it wasn't good enough from them, because we don't know. That's the bottom line. We don't actually know what the ins and outs were. But the bottom line is, whatever the end state comes to, if the fixtures committee, surely there's some responsibility there to say, well, is this pitch either going to be fit for purpose or is it going to be marked properly? Like, that's just the bottom line. Like, I know people will say things about Kilkenny football. Like, our club field out there has the second D on it and it has the halfway line marked as well, so the three players don't go past it. Like, you know, I just find it a bit... Scale doesn't like it.
That's like peeing in a church.
Oh, what?
Like, just, you can't do it. Like, you can't do that.
We're only keeping our best side forward, all right?
I have no idea how the acceptable level of behaviour became you can't have a piss in a church. I'm not going any further here.
I've never done it. Like, I'm just saying, geez, if you saw it happening, wouldn't you tell the lad to cop himself on?
I would have thought.
So as your groundsman is doing that big demurf, you come in over it. Yeah.
He's only doing his job. The man's only doing his job.
Someone told him to do it.
Do lads in East Galway regularly piss in churches then?
No, it's never done, but I'm just saying you wouldn't find the big D in our pitch. That sounded so bad. You wouldn't find the football D's. I'm going to stop here.
It's a family show. If anyone got the joke, they'll be fine. They'll be laughing away in the background. If you're not, you don't need to ask mum or dad what scale was.
Well, speaking of mum, my mother was correct. We're at the dinner table today. First of all, happy Mother's Day, actually, and Grandmother's Day and all that jazz. But Michelle was asking my mother, did you hear the podcast last week, the member section? And mam goes, no, I didn't hear it. And she goes, are you a member? And she goes, how do you be a member? Oh, you have to pay for that. I'm not going to pay to listen to that lesson. For looking over at me, my own mother.
Fair enough.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Not sure that's going to be the OTB members promo where it's like, Scale's own mother won't even pay to listen to it.
Or she won't pay, yeah.
Not sure how that works. Well, we can probably send her, if I free it up, I can send her. Well, by the way, what was your sister's particular part that she wanted your mother to hear?
The coaching section.
Okay.
The social media section.
Yeah.
You know, that she thought that everyone should hear it. My sister would be a big fan, anyways.
Okay, let's see if we can maybe make that available. So, look, I said to you before we went on air, because obviously we all saw the video. I took it into the WhatsApp group yesterday. It was sent to me by a few people, including I think Peter Fortune from Loud had sent it to me yesterday evening as well. I'd be largely in agreement with the lads. I don't think it necessarily has to be Croke Park, but I think what we're missing out on here, Scale, is the possibility for having these in Semple Stadium, maybe. It doesn't necessarily have to be Croker, but I think all the hurling finals should be on the one weekend. And I don't see why you can't pair one of the lower division finals with one of the top finals. So say 1A, like we had at the weekend, where they moved it around and it worked out that it was, you know, Division 2 final was in with Division 4 and Division 1, Division 3 were together.
Yeah.
Why couldn't we have something that the opening game, and I don't care how many people go or don't go to these games, say if it's the Division 4 final and then you've got Division 1A on afterwards, or have it at least in a way that they get to go to a interesting hurling venue, as opposed to, I totally understand for logistics why you go to Inniskeen, where it would be a halfway venue between Kildare and Down. And that's, again, no knock on Inniskeen whatsoever here, but wouldn't it be tremendous for both teams to get to go to the Hurlis to play that game?
Yeah, well, your question was, what's stopping them? What is the issue? There's no issue. Absolutely not. This is just a decision taken. You see, it's not derived from health and safety or you know, or politics or finance, you know, or anything of that. Like, there's no external factor or specific reason why the GA or others, the fixtures committee, I don't know who does it, would put these teams other than, you know, it's convenient for them to put it in X stadium, X pitch. We have two national finals per year. We have the National League and we have the Ireland final. That's it. We don't have 10. We have two. And so if you're lucky enough to partake in one of those occasions, you want that occasion to be in one of our premier stadiums. I would class a premier stadium around, from hurling perspective, Croke Park, Nolan Park, you know, Thurles, Páirc Uí Chaoimh. There's loads of stadiums they can go to, a tier one stadium. And if you ask a hurler in Down, now people might disagree. Would you travel to Páirc Uí Chaoimh to play the national final? They'd say yes, absolutely. Like, so hurlers want to play, and they want to play in the biggest venues, against the biggest in the biggest venues in front of the biggest crowd. Of course they get. If there was 100 people out or 10,000, I just think it's irrelevant. You know, there needs to be some sort of incentive, you know, for a group of current players but also future players. Now, I'm very big on this in terms of the future players. Like, if you're a 16-year-old and you're questioning, will I go at football, will I go at hurling, will I go at rugby, will I go at soccer, there has to be kind of a pathway to better days or brighter days. And, like, with all respect, right, having your national finals in club pitches is not a very, very bright pathway. That's not respect to the people who put on the occasion. Kudos to them. However, if you're kind of semi-indecisive about which way you're going to turn, incentivize them. Grow our sport. I hear great talking about growing our sport. In terms of action, it's actually very hard to pinpoint where the action is. That's just being honest. You know, and I'm not talking about putting a couple of coaches into counties. That's all great. However, when you get an opportunity to promote the game on a large scale, penciled into a big stadium. And like you said, Will, if number one and three was on together, you know, and two and four were on together, wouldn't that be a great occasion for all teams? Like, so if you divided out the Offaly and Waterford game and mixed them up, let's say, with the Division 2 final, Division 3 final, I think it's irrelevant which one you pick. Like, it just creates a much greater occasion for the lads who are part of the national final. So I can understand the frustrations, probably the anger, the borderline anger from both managers. And I'm happy that they said it publicly, because, you know, it's not the first time it's been said. And, you know, now that it's said and it's got a little bit of traction, will it die or will it gain a bit of more, we'll get more traction for next year? I'd say it's probably the latter, not the former, hopefully.
Also, just to ensure we are comparing apples with apples and oranges with oranges and so on. So Down, if you're a Down, say you're winning the hearts and minds of a youngster in Down who wants to play hurling or football. So Down last year they lost to Westmeath in the Division 3 football final, Son and Croke Park. So they're essentially in the Division 3 hurling final this year, got promoted. Fantastic news for the first time in, I think it's 17 years since they played in Division 1, the hurling league. It's going to be next year. And Down play not in a national venue when it comes to their hurlers in the third flight. And similarly, Kildare, in the day just gone by, played a Division 3 football final, Croke Park. The hurlers were in a Division 3 final in the hurling and it was played in Enniskeen. I just think sometimes hurling seems to be a bit forgotten. And this goes back to, it's not a today or yesterday thing. Joe McDonagh Cup, when it came in, the final is the only televised game that we get to see. The Joe McDonagh Cup gets to be on in Croke Park before the Leinster final. The minute the football was reforming and people had to be convinced about having a second flight championship final, both semi-finals were going to be in RTE, semi-finals and final all to be at Croke Park. When football needed to be reviewed around the playing rules, we got the most high-profile year and a half of this getting ready. Jim Gavin was brought in to head up a committee. We're getting weekly updates from that committee about small changes that are being made and metrics and all sorts of stuff. And the Football Review Committee have got the power to go to Central Council and say, here's a change that we feel that you should make. Hurling, to me, has been forgotten about for way too long.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
and this is to both of you guys. I feel sometimes that let's say the Division 3 hurling final is unfairly compared to teams in Division 1, for example. So when you're looking at the spectacle or what's put in front of you, sometimes people will compare, Osh, it's not as good as Limerick or Clare. In football, it's never the case. I guarantee the Division 4 final will not be compared to the Division 1 final of today. For reasons I can't fathom this. I don't know what it is. But like, yet, we will pick on the counties who are maybe ranked, you know, 19-20 in hurling in Ireland versus the top 5 or 6 for reasons I just can't fathom.
I don't think you have to go, I'll let Murphy in on this in a second, but I don't even have to go that far down. Like, I often hear where people go, it's only 1B though. Or, oof, watching 1B and 1A, it's like watching two different sports. Yeah. It's almost disparaged before it even happens. But
why is that?
You come in on this.
That's a question.
What?
Why is that? Like, why are people so, is the product of hurling in terms of Division 1 so high and so elite that anything below it, let's say, is considered, you know, subpar, not good enough, shouldn't even bother looking at it because the product we have is so good? Is Division 1 football so ordinary, you know, that it's the same as Division 4? Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
What do you think?
I don't know. It's a simple answer as to why we compared. I think one of the things with hurling is that the top end and the bottom end, there's such a difference in terms of the execution of the skill. Like, because it's such a skillful game, it's like the top end of golf and the bottom end of golf. There's a big gulf there in terms of just, I suppose, the skill that's on display. But the thing is, we're like, with football, that gulf probably isn't there, isn't very apparently there, I suppose, is the best way to put it. So oftentimes, it feels like, look, I suppose football is played across way more counties, so that there's way more competition there. So maybe they get to have the mantle then of saying that, well, football's in a better place and so on. But would a bottom team in Division 4, I'm trying to think, is it, I think it's Waterford, I think, are that direction. If I'm going to be trying to be fair here in teams, I think it's Waterford. How would they get on against Kerry? They would get the same beating, probably, that who do we pick out? Let's say Fermanagh would get from playing Limerick. But the beating would be bigger just by nature of the fact that,
yeah,
the sport that hurling is, it's very hard for it to be dragged into a dogfight. So the beating there would be far huger. But in essence, the teams, the gap is still the same. The gap is still there. I just think it's less apparent in football. So as a result, you have a lot more supporters, a lot more people follow football as well. That's the other side of it. But look, do you know what I'm going to say with this one? I don't have an answer as to why the conversation is that way in it. I'm not really sure. It's definitely one we'd have to pull at more. But I just go back to your point, Will. You're dead right. Like, people will often brush aside 1B straight away, our second tier in the league, but won't brush away a lower tier in the football. And I said, I don't have an answer as to why they do that or why it can be justified. And it probably brings us full circle back to our first conversation of how did this happen that, let's say, a Division 4 final was played in a club ground, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think it just brings it all back around to that. And again, it probably harps on the point, Will, that you're saying, that hurling just hasn't been a conversation. And look, something we spoke about previously, we're going to talk to Willie Maher. Like, Willie Maher has been probably the Jim Gavin now of hurling. Is it fair to compare them? They're a little bit different, aren't they, Will, in that Jim Gavin?
I think so. And I think, to be fair to Willie Maher and everything we've seen so far, we're going to meet him in a few weeks' time. We may as well let the cat out of the bag on that one. We're going to have a chat with him, the three of us. I get the feeling that he's even set the parameters slightly different to what Jim Gavin did. So Jim Gavin and the people he put around him in the Football Review Committee was very much about, we want to change the playing rules and we're going to look at this very specific thing. Yeah. Willie Maher is going in to try and look at a billion things. And probably quite a few things that have been neglected, forgotten about, for various different biases, they haven't been looked at for quite some time. I think, as we've said before, the challenge between... And I don't think Willie Maher is going to be the type of guy, by the way, that ends up in the situation Martin Fogarty was in, which was he goes to counties where there's very few clubs, realise how bad it is, and then tries to arrange helmets and slitters being sent up and realising that, oh God, this is such a big job. I think Willie Maher is looking at an overall plan, and I think he's trying to find a way to maybe look at, here's the tier one counties, what they're doing right now. Here's the counties just outside of that, and here's how maybe they can close the gap. Here's how we can encourage hurling here. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but from everything I've heard, he strikes me as a strategic man who wants to have a plan that he can pass on to whoever comes in 5 years' time. In Jim Gavin's case, I think he realised he had to go balls to the wall, get this over the line, get these accepted at Congress, and then make the changes in the short period of time that he had afterwards. And whenever he steps away as the Football Review Committee chairman, he can say, I've done this in the short term. I think just the political will within the GAA to reform football is a lot more than hurling. I'm not sure if that's because there's more counties that have got football representatives on central council.
It's way easier, Will.
A myriad of things, I'd say.
It's way easier to do it.
And I think with Jim Gavin's job, Jim Gavin's and Willie Maher's job are completely different from my point of view, that Willie Maher is looking to resurrect hurling in lots of counties from the lowest level up. Like, I mean, you know, probably looking to have teams at under 13, 14, 15, the whole way up. Jim Gavin's job was to make football exciting again, essentially. It was nearly like a Trump job, make America great again. Yeah, and like, it was kind of a thing of, okay, well, what's the issue at the moment? What can we bring in? And there was rules that would have an immediate effect once implemented tomorrow. Yeah. Where Willie Maher's is very much, how do I light the fire in counties where hurling isn't popular at all? And how do I put a hurling in the hands of boys and girls around the country where previous times they wouldn't have hurled? I think it's actually very hard to even compare the two jobs that both of those men have or had, because one problem was very much the game is gone in terms of what it looks like. What Willie Maher is looking at is, how do I get hurling from being, I think it's like 8% of youngsters played in the country. How do I bring that to 15? I think that's what he's more looking at. Whereas that wasn't, I feel, and I'm hoping to be corrected, but that's not what I feel Jim Gavin's job was. Jim Gavin's job was football has turned into a defensive game where lads are holding onto the ball. How do we encourage it being more open? And, you know, in a nutshell.
I think as well, there's loads of people who are happy enough to accept that the elite end of hurling is brilliant at the moment. I don't really care about what happens further down.
Agreed.
I think loads of people can sit down and go, if Cork and Clare is brilliantly entertained and we get another battle between Cork and Limerick at some point, or, you know, that's fine for me. And even maybe Galway Kilkenny is enough entertainment for them. Or they want to get to that tail end of the championship. They like the idea of going along to a Munster final or an All-Ireland semi-final or final. And they'll turn around and go, wasn't the All-Ireland final amazing last year?
Yeah.
Hurling's in rude health. They don't give a crap about what happens.
No, but if you like, I also believe when you're talking there, Murphy, about, let's say, Willie Maher and Jim Gavins, if you're comparing apples to apples, it's one thing. But we're comparing a sport that is, you know, 10 times harder for a youngster to pick up, in my opinion. So for me, hurling is skill based first, athleticism second. Football is athleticism first, skill based second. That's reality. You can't argue with being that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you're fit, you'll go a long way in football. So if you're going into a club that has football dominated, it's very hard to get a take up from young lads to take up a sport that is very, very skill dominated, that requires loads of practice, hours and hours and hours and hours, when there's a ready made sport right in front of you that you can partake in. So William Maher's job is extremely difficult. If you were to take up the two sports, bring them to a different bloody country and start them off, let's say, you would fast track football way faster for kids than you would at hurling. So, like, Willie's got a really hard job. I've often put myself in his shoes, or the Martin Fogarty's shoes, and asked the question, what would I do? And I've never come to an answer, a genuine answer that I could think would actually work, because it just takes monumental effort, finance, personnel, and then uptake from the people in the localities. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he has to say in terms of his plans. He's been the boots on the ground. He's seen, let's say, counties across the board that we wouldn't have any knowledge of in terms of the challenges. Let's say, I want to hear what he's facing, the challenges he's facing, whether it be from people. There could be resistance in counties, don't you know what there would be. Equipment, finance, coaches, you know, it's going to be a really good conversation. I can't wait to hear it.
There will 100% be resistance, by the way. Like, even listening to Liam Griffin when he was talking about, you know, the motion that was brought before Congress with the idea that, you know, every club, I think it was from, like, say, under 10 down, would have to have a hurling unit, essentially, and it met resistance. Like, the idea of even just
facilitating the sport.
It's like, it's even a case of, it doesn't need to be, you need to be good at it. It's that you provide the opportunity for every young person that comes through your club, and I'm going to include Camogie as part of this as well, say, like, men and women coming through, that they get the opportunity to at least play the game. There's loads of places that aren't interested in promoting it or bringing it in. So that, to me, kind of tells its own issue. So the thing is, Murph, we know that one of the players not playing in the Division 1B final is going to be James Mann, the Offaly defender. Loads of people in the comments last week and online, there was a huge discourse about this, were saying he's going to be cleared on appeal. There was no contact.
Yeah.
And therefore he's not going to be there. And we did warn last week as well, that Alan Tynan, his red card had been upheld, and the rule that was stated, and here's the quote, behaving in any way which is dangerous to an opponent, which is obviously quite loose. So then you can interpret that as, well, if it looked like Mahan was going to use excessive force on Gavin Fives last week, the red card is upheld. And so the red card that was given by Johnny Murphy on the instruction Sean Stack has now been held up. I think this is going to be a big difficulty later in the year, because I think these will end up in DRAs if they're championship red cards.
Yep.
But the two red cards that we saw that weren't overturned by the Central Hearings Committee are now going to be, I think, defending the referee on this, where they will say the interpretation is it was a dangerous tackle and so therefore the red card is upheld. I reckon we're going to have at least one of these in the summer, which is going to be challenged right up until the Friday of a game by the DRA.
Yeah, this James Mahan one, it's just wrong. Like, it's like you can't uphold that and justify it, that it was dangerous. Like, we were training with the club this morning. We had about 12 or 14 lads, 15 lads training. We did a few drills. There was five or six tackles in that. And I will say they were worse. Like, they weren't red cards, but there was, like, stuff that happened in training that you go.
There were four of them.
I got four of them. I could barely turn my neck. But do you know what I mean? Like, I literally thought this to go, like, what he did was in no way dangerous. He didn't injure a player. It didn't look malicious. There was nothing about it. And I genuinely thought that to myself when I heard it was upheld. I was like, training this week, I've seen, and I say worse tackles, just normal things. Like, lads going in just tackling each other grand. I don't know. I can only presume it was protecting officials that they said, yeah, we're going to uphold this as to maybe not have egg in the face. But I can't see how you can justify this one.
If you're choosing one body to protect over the other, i.e. officials over what's technically correct, sure. Mm-hmm. Then you're getting into a very, very kind of subjective matter, are you not?
It's a funny area to get into because, like, let's talk about John Keenan a few years ago. Ref probably won the best Munster finals going, but appeared to get punished because he didn't get an All-Ireland semi-final or final afterwards. And that year, I thought he was the best referee in the country. I can't remember who did the final, not to take away from that person. But John Keenan was outstanding. But we felt that he was punished for forces that we can't see, kind of said, listen, you have to hold that fella back there now. You know, that was a loose enough Munster final and it was one of the best ones going. It feels like he can point to so many things over the last few years where there's conversations that aren't open to the public. We don't see and decisions are made. And it's okay, let's move on. You're not getting an explanation for that. Like an apparent explanation has been given by way of saying, oh, it was potentially dangerous. It wasn't in any way dangerous to the player. There was no way that was dangerous. And if you wanted to look back over that match, you could actually pick out, I'd be even happy to do it, you'd probably pick out a tackle that was potentially, if we're going to talk about potentially more dangerous to a player, you could hypothetically create another tackle and say, well, that play, technically that tackle is going to be worse.
There was two within that game. One came up on League Sunday, which was Brian Dignan, who definitely came in too heavy. And a few people asked me, like, for the sake of balance, we try and do as much as we possibly can on the pod. And we talked about this extensively enough last week about, you know, contact, non-contact, the intention around red cards and so on. And there was definitely one guy who, like, tweeted me about four times on different tweets going, well, call it, the Dignan should have been sent off. And I was like, Brian Dignan was probably lucky not to be sent off. Because, again, the way this is interpreted, he came in reasonably high body position, came in aggressively. And under that exact ruling, he could have got a red card. Similarly, Billy Nolan, when he came out, and Charlie Mitchell, when the Waterford goalkeeper was charging out and he catches him around the jaw, that could equally have been considered as a dangerous hit or trying to create danger to an opponent. I actually didn't think either of them were red cards. I think Dignan's was probably the reddest of the three, most likely. But man, definitely shouldn't have been sent off.
Did you see
the one from the Cork and Clare and Trinity game?
Yeah. So again,
that was a joke, though. It was a joke. Like, I think the Clare player was it Hegarty, Fred Hegarty? You'd have to see it more to give true context, but there was, like, no context.
I'll mute away here now and I'll have a little look.
Yeah, so I think the guy's name, Murph, is Fred Hegarty. But for me, I heard somewhere during the week, I can't remember who it came from, but how do we deter this? There's an element of diving in the game. That's just reality. You know, I'm not picking on players, I'm not blaming them. But if you consider the reward, that if I go down with a dive, I can get my opponent sent off because the ref will fall for it. I'm going to do it. Like, so how do we deter that? Someone said, on what publication, I don't know, that if you go down with a perceived head injury from contact from an opponent, you have to go off for 15 minutes straight away. You're off because you've got a head injury. So that, I guarantee you, would take lads, you know, to think twice about things. Like, if you're going off for what would you call it in rugby? HIA? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, HIA.
HIA. So if you go off for a HIA in hurling and you're losing 15 minutes, do you think you're going to go diving? Lads, won't be so fast to do it. I'd love to see that kind of rule, that instance brought in, because it's just becoming weekly. If we had one incident a month or something like that, or one a year, you'd say, oh, grand. But this is two and three a week. So now it has just crept in the game. It's in our game now. It's in our game. It's a poison in the game that we have lads diving. That has to be cut out completely. And refs, as much as we give out of them, they can't, you know, they can't call every decision right. And sometimes players do fool the refs. And they don't have as we know, they don't have video replay. So they will get fooled. And we'll be the ones watching thinking, how did you get fooled there? But in reality, it happens. You get caught at the wrong angle. You know, next thing your ref gets fooled, you think he's going down with a head injury. Bang, red card. Game has changed entirely. So sometimes we don't know about that.
Yeah.
Do you look at the most under 21 there, yeah?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah. No, it's not a red card. It was...
Is it even yellow? Is it yellow straight up? Like?
No. He ran in to tackle a man who was rising the ball and nothing. Like, there's nothing there, like, you know. And again, there was simulation to be had.
I don't want to harp on about the old days, but the tweet that I put up about the car being upheld was quoted by Cormac O'Malley, who's always good fun on Twitter. And he had the one of the rock, you know, where he bursts out and puts the ball over the bar.
I love it.
I was like, under this interpretation, that would have been red card for the rock and a free in for Limerick.
Yeah.
Red card for the rock and free of the Limerick. Oh my God.
Oh, could you imagine?
And I don't want to hark back to the old days, but genuinely, there has to be that possibility for a bit of physicality as well. I don't want any player to get injured or damaged, and I know that Jamie Wall was talking about this on OTB Breakfast last week, that we kind of have to err on the side of caution, and I thought he articulated his point really, really well. But there is the risk that if we go too far on the side of caution, lads are going to hit the deck during the summer, because you know that you can get a guy sent off, and crucially, you get a red card in a championship game, it could determine the whole thing.
Yeah, but equally, we can bring in the rules also then for the simulation, which is, it's in soccer. We don't take many rules from that, but like, why not? If it's like, if essentially, if there's anything happening in the game that you want to rule out, bring in a rule that sanctions against it, and that's it. And yet, like, you go back 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, we were talking about protecting lads' heads 100%. It's not that this is a really fine margin. It's not, like, as in very obvious tackles that are shoulders to the head, absolutely. But when the dial swings too far the other direction, where it's, oh, geez, hypothetically, if that player was in another position, that would have been dangerous. That's too far. Come, bring it back the other direction there now. Yeah. When a player is hitting the head, similar to rugby, when they're hitting the head, that's it, red card. Player's not hitting the head, even if the player went in at 90 miles an hour and hits him just off the shoulder, well, okay, that's a yellow card, and let's just calm down.
I think there could be nuance here as well, Skell, before we move off this, that the Conor Cooney hit, which we, I think, all called out on Mike Casey the week before, is totally different to James Mann's red card, which he gets in that game. Hmm. They're not in the same ballpark, are they?
They're not even... No, you're right. They're not the same ballpark. I think, let's say, there was no... How to put this now, right? You can tell by body shape. You can tell by pace of tackle. You can tell by, you know, his height of body, even the intent, all by, you know... So, body language. That's why I put it into your way. We see a snapshot, a picture. We don't hear anything. We just see it in front of us, okay? So we're very objective, right? You know what I mean? I think anyway. So I can see the Conor Cooney tackle in real time, straight away, that's Carthage. No two ways about it. He went in way too hard, no mitigating factor, red card. And Conor was doing the same thing himself. James Mahan went, Jesus, I'm like, there was no intent there. Like, he was trying to stand him up, like he was trying to kind of deter him as opposed to flip and do him, you know? That's why I think when you take these decisions and you go on, you know, what if, or maybe, or geez, what was he intended to do, let's say, even though it didn't happen, that's a different ballgame for me. Because as I was saying last week, lads, you're judging intention versus action. You know what I mean? It should be always action. A referee should always judge action. Committees who look at decisions, or even if they're citing a rugby, it should be the action, not the intention. Because the minute you bring in opinion to this kind of thing, it just skews off to a different realm, where the three of us might look at an incident, right? And if we're coming to a decision on an opinion base, right, three of us might agree. We can have three different opinions. But if we're looking at the action on a rule book, I guarantee we agree, all of us. So I just the simulation now is bothering me, Murph. It really is. It's getting to me, because I don't want to see it. Like, we're all fans of fast hurling and hard hurling. We don't want to see anyone get hurt. Absolutely. But when nobody gets hurt and there was no intention behind it, but yet leg goes down holding his head, Jesus, I don't know. He should get a red card too after. he should get a ban the week after. Like, we need to get like Ruby. We need to cite them. Yeah. Cite that
for diving. Oh, no. If it's not bad enough already, we get to a point where there's citations for lads hitting the deck and we spend all week deciding who's going to be suspended or not suspended. Half a team could be gone for a game the next week. Speaking of people who might be available in weeks and whatever else, this is a very curious, Murph, the Shane O'Donnell story during the week, wasn't it? So the Irish Examiner reported, I think it was Wednesday morning, that he was back in non-contact training. And I thought this was particularly curious because Brian Lowen had been doing a bit of media. I think there were Zoom calls he was doing from the Munster senior hurling launch. And then it looked like the Examiner had an interesting scoop that he was back. Mm-hmm. And maybe this meant that he hadn't gone under the knife. And actually, we were all writing him off for the season. And maybe he was actually back, even if it might be a few weeks. And then the Clare Champion reported the next day that they had spoken to Brian Lowen. And Brian Lowen said categorically that Shane O'Donnell is doing no training or non-contact training. The only thing is, Murph, there's enough ambiguity here that maybe Shane O'Donnell isn't totally ruled out, but Brian Lowen is telling the truth by saying that he hasn't been training. Maybe his year isn't over.
Yeah, maybe so. The ambiguity, it's like the ambiguity surrounding Nicky Quaid. You're wondering, was it a case? Was it Shane O'Brien said it?
Yeah.
Very, you know, imagine like John Kiley was just going, Jesus, he shouldn't have said that. Like, is it a thing where there's something going on behind the scene that we don't know about, and that maybe Shane O'Donnell is in a better chance of playing this year than we previously thought, but that they're trying to keep it under as much wraps as possible, and that maybe cold water was poured on it yesterday or whatever it was, the day before, where the Examiner withdrew their statement. Maybe that's the case. It probably is. Like, I mean, to be honest, I'd be more inclined to believe that Shane O'Donnell is in with the shout and that there's some plan afoot in order to get him to play the championship. But at the moment, and I completely understand it, Clare, like, we'd rather prepare and prepare our own team and also have nobody talking about it. Let's just say Shane O'Donnell is not going to be involved. And invariably along the way then, Shane O'Donnell will do physio work and he might be running and he might be whatever. Something will slip out and they'll try and stop it. So I'd be more inclined to say there probably is something there in that he's making serious efforts to try and be involved. Maybe they'll come to some arrangement where he either won't get surgery until September, or I don't know, who knows. But I'd be inclined to say, again, no smoke without fire. So there's probably something there.
Skell, you were the expert when it came to the shoulder and recovery and so on. No, because I remember we asked you about this and you went, if he's had the surgery, game over. Don't even think about him coming back at some point during the year. But you were saying if they were taking a different type of treatment and if he hadn't actually gone under the knife, then he's not totally ruled out.
No, so I was saying to you that like when the shoulder pops, it's a dislocation, which I'm assuming is what's happened to him. I don't know, is it a collarbone? I don't know what it is, but I'm assuming it's a shoulder dislocation. If that pops, okay, the chance of it popping again is very high. So if it's been continuously at him throughout last year's championship and the club championship, and there was a decision to go get the jersey or the surgery, that's because the shoulder is too unstable and it can't take the heavy hits of intercounty hurling. So if he gets the surgery in, was it around late January, early February? When was it?
Well, it was around about that time. Yeah, it was definitely after the turn of the year anyway. Yeah.
So if you go into get keyhole surgery, let's say, like I did, you're going to be 16 weeks. One time every 24 weeks when you did the incision down the front or back of your shoulder. If you go into the keyhole element, right, that's going to be 16 weeks before you get back to contact training. Right. So 16 weeks, 4 months from February, like that was me saying game over. That's if he got that particular type of surgery. Like, are his legs able to operate? Of course they are. Like, is he on a bike at the moment or on a walking treadmill? Potentially. You know what I mean? Is that what's classified as non-contact training? Maybe. But if we're talking about getting him back on a pitch before Munster Championship or the second or third round, Jesus, I find that very hard to see. Like, we're talking literally 3 weeks away. So he'd be what? Maybe, would he be 10, 12 weeks post-surgery if he got it? Christ, that'd be a record. That'd be a record. He'd want to be studied. He'd want to put into somewhere in the Museum of Science and how he got back so fast, because I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
She's a couldn't. Like, I admit, if, and that's the big if left, if he got surgery in February or whenever it was, you know, I just think it's impossible for him to come back. Different than Cleary. Cleary popped his shoulder, remember that? Didn't get surgery, just strapped it up and went through it. That's way different.
I think that is the only possibility, is that, and what Brian Lowen was saying was true earlier this year, where he said, look, we've been instructed that Shane needs to get surgery, therefore he's written off for the year. If for whatever reason, quietly in the background, he meets with a surgeon or he meets with a specialist and they say, look, just put this off and let's see how it feels in a few weeks' time and let's see what kind of we can do around it, then maybe he's in contention. But I again, it's so much recovery time, and I appreciate he doesn't play much in the league, but it would be so difficult for him to come back into the Heat Championship as well with no time behind him whatsoever. And we would have heard if he was training, surely.
Yeah.
Everything leaks.
But just think of the shoulder, right? We're not talking about a bone breaking or a muscle tear. So it's not, that's what, or a tendon torn, let's say, where it can be repaired with surgery straight away, okay? We're talking about a socket, right? And so the more it slowly pops, the socket gets bigger. That's what it is, and it becomes completely unstable. So how was a surgeon or a consultant would tell him, yeah, you'd be grand. I don't see how that's going to be the case, you know. And look, maybe we'll see him strapped up. If you win for the surgery, I can't see it.
I got sucked in by this, Murph. I got sucked in by the fact that maybe the hurler of the year was going to be back when I'd written him off in my mind. And then I saw this on Wednesday and all the conversations happened. And you kind of go, just wouldn't it be great if he actually was back? Because we were all so kind of disappointed when he was ruled out initially. I think it's just natural that you kind of get drawn into the hype of him potentially getting back. Like, what a story it would be. Clare, after having a disappointing league, next thing the guy we didn't think they'd have is back in to save the day.
Yeah, but it's fair for you to get sucked in. Like, sure, it was the Examiner that reported it, wasn't it? Mm. So, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, Joe Soap throws up a tweet on Twitter and says, oh, I heard he's back. It's not reliable. If the Examiner put it up, you're entitled to grab onto him and go, brilliant, Shane O'Donnell's back, the hurler of the year is back. So I think it's perfectly reasonable. Like with any of these things, and I appreciate we're getting very close to April Fool's Day, we all have to have our guards up and all that, but there's a, like, when you see it from a reputable source, you're there going, oh, great, sure, this must be true. But we often see rumours during the year, you're like, that fella, is he reliable? Is this person reliable? I've only seen it in a few places on social media. Is it reliable? If the Examiner puts it up, you're pretty much going, sure, that's that. That's it. Yeah. He's back.
This wasn't Brilliant Banner 2013 on the Hogan forums, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it, where there may be an element of bias in the tweets. There is reason to just not question it if it's in a newspaper. Mm. Go, oh yeah, brilliant, fantastic, off we go, and turn your brain off and just enjoy it. But it won't be the end of it. I think we'll definitely hear more. And just even you were saying there, Will, like, can he go back into the heat of battle? We saw Tony Kelly last year. He found it very tough to go back into doing 70 minutes. But I think, wouldn't you love to be throwing Shane O'Donnell in there for 10 or 15 minutes if that was his first introduction at the end? Like, at the end of the day, his game is far more reliant on play by play. Like, a ball lands in, grabs the ball, creates something, off you go. And at the very least, you'll have a defender that will stay a half yard closer to him than anybody else. So if it's even a distraction to another team, it's a benefit.
Yeah. My source on Brian Hayes' injury not being that bad was Matt Cooper last Monday, where he had heard that it was actually a case of a knock to his knee as opposed to ligament damage. Because I think everyone, when they saw him go off, and we mentioned in the pod last week as well, was, oh, I really hope that's not a case of he's done damage around his knee and he could be out for a sustained period of time. So again, Pat Ryan was speaking to the media, and the Echo, it's not the Evening Echo anymore, to get used to it, just been called the Echo, said, quote, it's more kind of a bone bruising, two bones knocked off each other. We're not too sure yet of the timeline. It's not going to be season ending though. I would say he's touch and go for the start of the championship, but definitely he'll be back for the second set of games, which are in the middle of May. So it looks like this is I shouldn't use the word lucky break, but you know where I'm coming from here, Skell, that Hayes isn't going to be out for that long. And even if it is a case that they have to be conservative with his recovery, if it means that at the end of April, early May, he's back, that's a boost for Cork. Because definitely I'd say a lot of people were concerned seeing him walk off the pitch at Páirc Uí Chaoimh that night.
Well, I think the phrase lucky break should be applicable in this case, because if we're talking about him returning, judging by what Pat Ryan said, in 6 or 7 or 8 weeks' time, that's lucky. If that's the best case scenario at the moment, you know, that's 8 weeks versus a potential ACL tear. Hmm. So I'd say they're damn glad that he's facing only 6 or 7 weeks at this time of the year. Granted, he's in really good form, but at this time of year, great. If there's an ACL tear, you know, he's not coming back for 12 months. Like, so it's I'm happy because I like to see the best players, you know, on the pitch. Like, I don't see any player injured, let's say. So when he went off, regardless of opposition, it's like, Jesus, I hope that's not good, especially anything with the knee. Like, so for him to be potentially available. And like, when I hear comments from managers around injuries, I always take it a bit of pinch of salt, Will. Like, that could be on the pitch in 2 weeks. Who knows? Do you know what I mean? But here we are saying he might be there for 6 weeks. I doubt he'll talk at the weekend, but time will tell. You know, because managers could throw you either way.
Like, if you're listening, Pat Ryan's legal team, Skell is not casting any aspersions about Pat Ryan's comments in the media. He was very clear there was no timeline about his recovery, and he was not trying to mislead anybody in this podcast or anyone else.
Shut up, Will.
I'll get a job as your agent and lawyer at some point.
You'd have a job being my lawyer.
I fucking bet. Do you, by the way, before I ask Murphy what's going to happen this weekend, do you still have the predictions table or thing in front of you there?
I do, sir.
You looking out the notebook a couple of times. So, where are we at? This is bleeding into the main pod before we go to the members pod, because I have something we want to do around the members pod here for this week.
Well, sure. Look, in reality, with two games left, right?
Yeah.
So, Will, I went on games incorrect. We got wrong. Let's say, so Will was 11, Murph was 13, and I was 14. So by the law, judging by the last time I checked the books anyway, I'm fucked, right? I can't win, okay? So Will, it's between you and Murph. The best we can do, Murph, is get you to tie with Will.
Could have a draw by the end of this. It could still happen if we've different.
But all Will has to do, if he just wants to just win out, is just go with the teams I pick, and then he can't lose.
That's not been fair.
Yeah, we're going to have to call it.
I would never be disingenuous like that to go, well, actually, I would agree with Murph about Cork and Waterford for this weekend, and no matter what happens, we go down in the ship together. No, yeah, I'd be honest about my predictions, because it's a nice way of us talking about the games this weekend. So, Skell, give me your take on who's winning between Cork and Tipperary this weekend, then.
Right. Cork and Páirc Uí Chaoimh have a head start straight away.
Mm-hmm. How much?
So how much is the head start for me? I'm going to say 4 points. So they're plus four before any ball is thrown in, regardless of opposition. Cork are 4 points ahead of you. Down there in that stadium, in that pitch, where they train religiously and have their home crowd. So I'm putting Cork plus four. Can Tipperary close the gap? Yes, they can. The problem is Tipperary aren't scoring enough goals. For me, Cork are scoring goals for fun because of the way they're attacking teams. Tipperary are not, in my book, right? So can they score goals in Cork is one question.
The Tipperary crowd in the background are saying to you right now, Skell, but we beat them already.
I get that. I fully get it, right? And like, you know, then they could say a week later, Limerick clipped the shit out of them. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not putting major value on group games, to be honest, in the first couple of rounds. I'd say I do put a value on the last round or two, straight up. And I put great value on the fact that Chip came from X amount of points down from Clare to win it in injury time. Mm. That's great for morale and for team boosting, right? But just the Cork machine, you know, it's rolling at the moment. I know we talked about Brian Hayes, and he was a huge reason as to why they're rolling and getting all the goals. But still, I just think they're moving so well, like physically moving, athletically moving so well. They're a very, very hard team to defend against. And then in the same breath, we know how they're doing. They're defending mean, as we said before. They're taking you down before you get a chance to get a goal. So I'm putting Cork plus four, and I'm putting them to win the game. So I'm going to go Cork.
Okay.
Number one. Do you want me to call the second game, or will you keep going?
No. We'll go around this game, then we can do 1B then.
Sure.
My kind of thought process is I think Tipperary have been very clever around this game, actually. So this ensures the next championship meeting between them goes to Semple Stadium because of their home and away agreement. They're also going to be playing them in the group stages. So you got to run out of Páirc Uí Chaoimh before you go there. This kind of is a double win. And also, if you're Tipperary right now, all the pressure is on Cork because lads like us have been talking Cork up for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Tipperary quietly gone about their business, qualify for the final a week in advance, have a really good idea, as we've said a few times, about how their team is shaping up at this stage, get a first start of the year into Noel McGrath for that last game against Clare, rest the under-20s. I appreciate they lost against Limerick afterwards, but it was the right thing to do to have them fresh for that game on the Tuesday. And Tipperary come into this, I'm not saying under the radar in any way, but like all of the talk is around Cork right now. And I think there's a big performance in this team.
But there's reason for it. So talk doesn't attach itself to a team for no one reason. There's a reason that there's Cork on Cork. The last two games they've played have been very impressive. Granted, against two teams who haven't been going great, but like the way they've been opening teams up has just been so, you know, refreshing and impressive this time of year. Like we'd equated the way the Limerick were operating at the last stage of championship games in years previous. So like this is, it's exceptional. And like if Tipperary turn around and make this into a battle and turn over Cork, that is going to leapfrog them into championship contention. Just a monster I'm talking about. Yeah, it will though, but how would it not? You know what I mean?
I know. But I can see people are raising, three, you wrote them off last summer.
But we can't sit here, right, and say Cork are definitely top two in Ireland, for the Ireland, right? And then if they get turned around in their home stadium, probably Cork will go with a full outfit, obviously, fully available outfit. And if Tip potentially turned them over, that's a fair feat, lads. If it happens. I've just said I don't expect it to happen, but I think Cork are rampant favourites for good reason, and the talk is justified. It's legitimate.
Look, I think Páirc Uí Chaoimh is a factor in this, but I appreciate that Tipperary did a really good job on Cork, and it was, what, nearly a month ago now at this stage, that group game in Semple Stadium, so it's been a while, and I know you can put kind of recency on the way they've played in the last few weeks or whatever else, but I think Tipperary kind of tapered off nicely after they put themselves into a position to get to the league final. I think both these teams go strong. I think this is going to be a fantastic opportunity for both teams to get a piece of silverware. These are, for the neutral, the ideal two teams to meet in the final. We mentioned last week, haven't played during the league finals in 1960. Been a while since both of them won a Tip. Is 08 and it's 98, I think, for Cork off the top of my head here, where they haven't won the league since. Tip feels like it's been a while. They've been away from the top table compared to where they were in 2019, and I felt like maybe that was going to be a team that'd be a legacy for a while. They've watched the teams around them go up and pick up silverware. For me, this is deliciously set up, and I think if Tipperary hit the level that they have early in the week, I'm going to go the opposite of you. I think Tipperary can win on Lee's side and get a bit of revenge for what happened in the championship last year.
Well, you said Ken, are they going to do it?
I'm going to back them now. I'm going for Tipperary to win the league final.
Holy Jesus. Okay.
Fair play. Because
he can both oppose me. And I agree with you. I think if Tipperary were to go and win in Páirc Uí Chaoimh and Cork go all at it this weekend, we have to reassess loads of things. And I guarantee you, we won't be turning around this time if Tipperary win the league to go, I don't think Tipperary will be one of the three teams not to come out of Munster. I don't mean to put off that klaxon to make that the debate right now, but if Tip win, you have to respect what they've done first half of the year.
What's that film, Murph? You're the film guru here. You have balls in like a Bengali tiger, is that what it is?
Man about dog.
Man about dog. It left me there for a minute. Come on.
Good show. We didn't watch Fatal Deviation yet. That'll have to come around.
I saw the trailer. Septic. And I was like, I don't know. Do I want to give away an hour and a half of my life? I feel the trailer covered what was going to happen.
Oh, the trailer. I'd sooner watch The Endless, honest to God. Bad. Murph, let's go. Tip v Cork.
Right, out the trap, I'll just go, I'm going to go Cork.
That's it, full stop.
Thank you. Yeah, we end the show there. So to round off one or two of the points that you had, like we saw Cork being really impressive against Galway. And Galway still kind of, even after Cork got the goals, Galway made a little rally back at them. I just don't think Galway had the players on the field to actually go and then, let's say, even draw level and push on and go a point or two up. So what I think is going to happen here is that when Cork do, let's say, get a purple patch, I think Tip will rally. And it's just a matter of how far that rally will go. I think it's going to be fairly nip and tuck from the start. Mm-hmm. But Cork have that creative edge that I think they're going to be able to hit the net. And if they do, how will Tip react? I think Tip will react well, but how far will it go after that? For me, Páirc Uíomh is an element. And I know, Will, you're kind of saying, yeah, but I think it is.
No, 100% is.
It is an element. And for me at the moment as well, I just think that the bench that Cork is unloading, regardless who's at the other side of the field, the bench that Cork's unloading is very impressive at the moment. And all those players seem very hungry. So they'll both go with strong teams, but with Cork, whatever team starts, what they have to come off the bench regardless is very strong. Like we saw Tipperary rotating there a little bit when they played Kilkenny, you know, they brought like Willie Connors off the bench, who was starting for most of the games, if I'm right in saying he was very good for the league. They were able to rotate a few players. They'll play their strongest team on Sunday. Cork will play their strongest team. For me, there's more names on the bench for Cork coming off the subs bench. It is very tight. The one interesting point that I'll add to this is that, Will, you basically made the point. There is a lot on the line for both teams to an extent, like within reason. But either team, whichever team loses, there will be a management job in terms of just picking the team up and moving on. Because Cork on Lee's side, with their backs up now at the moment, if they lose this, as you said, Will, that's a bit of a setback. That's a kind of a hang on for a second here now. Are we as good as we thought? You know, the bandwagon's up and going, you know, whatever. Tip on the other side. And, you know, speak with the elephant in the room. People, I've got two or three times people have asked me this week about, you know, is that Liam Cahill thing, you know, is it actually a thing where that if Tipperary are to lose, will the wheels come off the bandwagon? I don't know. The jury's out. That's the thing I said. I don't know. But the thing is that if it's true or if it's not true, when Tipperary or if Tipperary lose, let's say at some stage, how will they react? So that is going to be the challenge, because it's not, you know, first round of the league anymore where you're playing Galway, up in Galway, and Galway have a bad performance. But even if you lost, it's still fine. Now we're venturing into territories where whatever performance you put in, it's too close to championship not to write it off. So we're getting into that territory. So for me, one of the teams is going to lose. There is big repercussions for either team that loses here in terms of what is the manner of the defeat. If Cork lose, and let's say we've seen a performance out of Tipperary that is the best performance we've seen out of this Tipperary team, I think that's fine. I think they swallow it. Anything less than that, though, I think it's a hard one for Cork to swallow. For Tipperary, you know, if Cork set the place on fire and hit the net two or three times, how do Tipperary recoup from that with the narrative that's surrounding Tipperary at the moment? So that's just one thing I'll add in. And that's not me trying to size up, you know, I'm still going with Cork. But I do think there's an added thing here. Once we're picking the bones out of it next Sunday night, I think there's an element we'll have to look at to say, how will this affect either team going into it? Which is something we probably haven't said about any team in league final over the last few years.
Yeah. The thing about the whole Tip training load and going at the season too hard, et cetera, et cetera. You have to hit Munster hard anyway. And it's only a few weeks away.
Yeah.
So I think if you're a Tipperary, like we've talked about the teams who are going on training holidays and whatever else, and that's all happened at the moment, and they're going to come back and be ready and all that type of stuff. I just think if you're Tipperary, you go, you give it everything at this league final, you're happy with the way the campaign has gone, off the back of a disappointing summer last year, and you have a goal championship. I'm not 100% sure if there's actually a correlation between the way the Tipperary hurled in round two or round three of the league, or the training load they were putting on there versus what they do in championship. Tip need to get championship right anyway, even if you are parking the league.
Yeah, no, they do.
I think this is maybe a slightly unfair brush that's been used against them, actually.
Well, it's cumulative for me. Like, it's in this one game. If Tipperary go absolutely as hard as they can in this one game, it's not going to massively affect the legs for the rest of the championship. But it's a cumulative thing that people are talking about. Like, when have they been going hard since? And, like, at the bottom line, if you enter the Munster Championship and you're fresh, the Munster Championship is so intensive, it can just take it out of you anyway. So if you're entering the Munster Championship and you're at 90% or 85% and other teams are a lot stronger than that. That's where the battle of attrition comes in. So, like, Tipperary can go whole hog on Sunday, no problem at all. There's plenty of time to get ready for Munster. The question is, that will go unseen, that we won't see, is that, well, how hard have they been going since? Because they have been good since the start of the league. And I'll go back 10 years ago when we used to play against the Dublin teams, or even 15 years ago. Dublin used to be always mighty in the league, but then there were times where they'd hit the championship and they'd falter a bit because they were absolutely flying it in the first week of February. But can you, my legs couldn't sustain that in June, July, because, you know, the body naturally peaks at a certain time and falls away. That's the conversation that we're having there. So maybe, Will, are they getting beaten with it? No, I think it's a valid question to ask. We've seen it once or twice over the years. All people are doing is asking the question. And again, like we all do, in 8 weeks' time or 12 weeks' time, once we're finished with the Munster Championship and we go, well, what was that? We want to see that, have some of the teams been true to form of their form over the last few years? Like, will Watford, will they not get out of Munster this year? Will Cork fail to live up to the expectation of them? Will Limerick go back? These are all the questions. And the one question I think people have with Tipperary is that, will they sustain this? And I just think it's a very fair question to ask.
Maybe I've just gone soft in my old age and I now have some kind of love for Tipperary I didn't realise I even had. It's been
an awfully, man, that's strange.
Very strange. I've been accused.
What softened you? Winning cups over the last 5 years, that you put up the tweet there today. That's what softens you. Winning softens you, Will.
You're like a Cheshire cat.
I wouldn't mind. I truly am. I wouldn't mind, by the way, but you always get people who are going things like, is there going to be an open bus parade? And where are the fans going to the games then? Like, the reality is, right? So awfully over the last 5 years, indulge me for a second here, All-Ireland under-20 football, All-Ireland under-20 hurling, two Leinster under-20 hurling, Leinster under-20 football, Leinster minor hurling, McDonagh Cup, Christy Ring, two Division 2 hurling leagues, Division 3 football league, and in the 1B hurling league final this coming weekend as well. I tell you what, lads, there's not too many dual counties were able to amass those type of numbers. And they've competed in quite a few finals that they've lost over that period as well. They lost the McDonagh Cup final, lost to Christy Ring semi-final, they've lost a couple of hurling games. So, look, the reality is Offaly have done very well in the last 4 or 5 years.
And worth noting, the population of Offaly isn't huge either. What's the population of Offaly?
No, like, it's less than 100,000. That's why I thought it was really funny when people were going, oh, well, how can we not bring in a massive crowd? Lads, I hate to break it to you, there was about 32,000 people at all of the Football League finals across the weekend. If Offaly people didn't travel, Mayo and Kerry, who are known as some of the biggest supporters in the entire country, I would say Mayo, particularly at this time of year, tend to go balubas going to games. They weren't really there. Last night, 11,000. Roscommon and Monaghan, again, two, I would say, fairly well-supported teams. I know smaller populations, but tend to get their fans out. These finals in Gunnacrow Park just didn't seem to attract people. So, that's why you bring these games to Semple Stadium, people go.
Population of Offaly, right, was 83,000 in 2022. Yeah. Let's just give a conservative, let's say, 10% increase in sin, which is high, right?
Yeah.
It's 90,000, okay?
Yeah.
The Twitter page for Offaly GAA is 43,000.
We're box office.
F the Jays in County is on your Twitter.
So basically what you said in 2022, Offaly could have went and everybody could have done an overnight in Croke Park and had a seat. That's what they could have done. Could have a big sleepover, Offaly sleepover in Croke Park. Everybody's coming.
No, that doesn't include the diaspora, naturally. Offaly people who live elsewhere and so on.
No.
But at the same time, when it comes to the actual county, and I know people take the piss and they're like, oh, look at their under-20s getting on a bandwagon and whatever else. I don't really care if it's a bandwagon. I think if people want to go, and if it means that every young person in the county, like, I walked down to the middle of town on Friday and I know the weather was getting better and whatever else. There was a load of kids in, like, Adam Screeny jerseys and stuff. The amount of them are 15. Good. And I don't see, by the way, names, but someone's obviously printing names on some of the kids that were there. Because it was Screeny on the back of two of the jerseys that I saw when I was coming out of the cafe. But like, if that means that people are interested in going to games, and if they're going at under-20 level or they're going at minor level, maybe they'll keep going at senior. You can be as cynical as you want, like, about the senior games.
But put in context, right, the population of Galway City is 86,000.
There you go.
The whole county of Offaly is this. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, that's some good
tricky to get tickets for Ballinasloe. I saw there was arguments about it earlier on for the under-20 match on Tuesday week that... apparently there's not going to be enough tickets for Ballinasloe.
No, there won't.
So
there better not be.
And there you go. First round. I'm sure Galway are going to mobilise a big crowd.
Will you be there?
I'm thinking of going, because on the Tuesday, I wouldn't have probably been able to go if it had been on the weekend. So it's not too far from home. So it's very tempting, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a great venue, by the way. Actually, I really like going there anyway, because I have memories of going to watch Galway Club Hurling there as a youngster. And I think it's perfect. I think a lot of people from definitely the hurling end of Offaly, even though it's changing a little bit now, not too far from Ballinasloe. People in East Galway are going to go. It's a bit of attraction on both teams because they're both fancying their chances further down the year. I think it should be a good night. I'll chat to you if I'm over there at night.
Yeah, one. Murph, come on up.
I'll come on. Grand.
Might have to see if we can get a ticket for you. Might get a press ticket for you.
Yeah.
Earlier on, I saw going Offaly County Board both pointing out it was like, this game will sell out. Get a ticket now.
Yeah.
It definitely will. The other game is Offaly against Waterford, the 1B final. I'll put my cards on the table first of all here. So obviously Offaly won't have James Mann. He's out. Adam Screeny won't be involved. He won't be involved for that Galway game either. Not sure Skell totally believes me on this. And
April Fool's Day is not another couple of days.
Yeah. And the other bad...
He didn't hear me.
I did hear you. I heard you trying to do the Shannon Donnelly thing. Those extra 2 days could make all the difference. He could be back on the Tuesday if he's not involved in the Sunday. Tara Guyton's injury is a bad one. So he's ripped his hamstring, which gone for Kilcormac Colley at the tail end of last year as well. So he's going to miss, I believe, the entire under-20 campaign, particularly if he needs surgery. And he was just kind of getting into the Offaly team at the senior level as well. And Keelan Kiley had just come back and he re-injured his thumb in the last round of the league. So I think his thumb may well be fractured again. So he's going to be out for a while. They're not helpful things for Offaly against Waterford. No. You need to kind of be almost at your very best. And I also would think that Johnny Kelly will rest some of those under-20s with the Tuesday in mind. So
I'd like to see a team statement.
Well, I think he might, but I think he might not be able to in some cases because there's some of them that are already in the team. So if Keelan Kiley is injured, I would have thought Donald Shirley is so important for the under-20s, but he's become their natural number six. I'm sure they could shift things around a little bit, but he probably plays. Dan Burke probably plays at 11, even though he'd love to give him a break. And, you know, maybe there's not going to be that option to do it in the same way we thought there would be when it looked like they were going to be, you know, one day after another as opposed to the couple of days of a break.
Mm-hmm.
I think Waterford have improved as the league have gone on as well, and that's why I fancy Waterford to win it. I think 7 points is maybe could prove to be a little bit generous in the bookies at the moment. That's the current line on the game when it comes to the handicap. I think Offaly might get inside 7. I think it's very difficult to read too much into the game at Welsh Park because of the red card and because of the fact that Tadhg Burke then had that freedom which was facilitated by it and Waterford took complete control of the game. I also think Páirc Uí might suit Offaly's style of hurling. I don't know. I think Waterford will win, but I'm kind of thinking Waterford probably by 4 or 5 points here as opposed to this being a trimming. So, Murph, where are you thinking on this one?
We're just going Waterford.
Waterford, yeah, by about 5, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to go Waterford as well, just because it is that arduous week. Like, we don't know what teams we're talking about yet. Again, you're saying with the under-20s and so on, there's injuries there. There's James Mahon missing. And at the other side, a Waterford team that we were wondering when players are going to come back. They came back just in time for the last Offaly game, Tadhg Burke and these ads. So at the moment, I think it just gently tips in the scales of Waterford. I think It would certainly be a tougher one to call now if Offaly had everybody on the field. You'd be going, this is not simple. And then likewise, we'll give Waterford the credit if Waterford had everyone on the field as well. But I think just at the moment, it tips in the favour of Waterford. And especially, particularly the likes of Tadhg Burke and that being back. I just think there's enough there to have, you know, a bit of calmness on the field, a bit of game management, and just keep the game headed in the right direction. I can see what you're saying, Will. It's your head is telling you Waterford, but you're saying there's very little in this, or even as you're saying, why exactly am I picking Waterford? But yeah, I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt for a moment and go Waterford for again. I'll go a 5-point win.
Yeah, and look, as much as I'd love to add to that tweet and put 1B down below it, I would not swap it for 2 points against Dublin or against Antrim in the Leinster Championship. I think that should be Offaly's goal further down the track. Skell, what way are you picking?
I'm wondering, so Waterford are playing this week in the Under-20 Championship, right? Mm-hmm. They've only got two players that are on the squad in the seniors. Offaly, let's say, it's a different kettle of fish entirely. So they're playing after. So how much of a distraction is the Under-20 Championship, do you reckon? Or is it?
The two of us not trying to like bullshit each other on a podcast or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not like.
I would think that some of the pressure is off Offaly when it comes to the 20s for one reason. And that was because Galway have beaten Laois by 218 to 8 points yesterday. So Offaly will fancy beating Laois at home to qualify from that group. And if that means that they don't need to be at 100% for the game against Galway, I think they'll still qualify.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not quite as...
But everyone qualifies, you see. The one thing with the Trinity Championship, you've got a safety net. It's just wherever you finish in the table means like the next round you go into. So I don't think there's much concern. And this has been honest on either party, ourselves or Offaly. We know we're both qualifying. We know the sharks, fish
the sharks are in the water. Yeah, exactly.
Later on. With the and that fish could be each other. Do you know what I mean? Let's say when you get towards the Leinster final or whatever, please God. So I see part of me was saying it's a distraction, but it's not. Like, I should think it's a national final for Offaly. So when you say like they're going to rest the 20s, I just can't see it myself personally, because if they have a safety net in the 20s, I know they're qualified and they're up. I get that, right? I think Offaly have to go full bore here. Whoever's available, put them out, regardless of their age. I think if they're on your starting team for Offaly, you go for it. If they're 19 or 20, grand. But this is your national final.
You, by the way, you've talked me around to this, because I was just thinking in my head, I was doing out the team that played Waterford away, and basically they picked their strongest team available for the last round, even though there was nothing to play for.
Yeah, correct, yeah.
So maybe like momentum, exactly same.
Like if you can keep a continuation of momentum, it's very strong for a team. You know, physically, mentally, morale, etc. So in saying all that, right, I think you said Páirc Uí Chaoimh would suit Offaly. I think Páirc Uí Chaoimh would suit Waterford a bit as well.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, just like I think if you go into a pitch like that, right, the speed of hurling increases exponentially. So fitness, let's say, is an SM is very, very important, but your speed of hurling is crucial. I just think the speed that Waterford operate is a touch above Offaly at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the wet sod didn't help Waterford in the game that was played in the rain last Saturday week as well.
Oh, the wet sod, it suits a skillful team, but it brings a bit of neutrality down to it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going Waterford. In terms of a gap in distance, I do think, though, that the Waterford have a stronger panel to come on as well. So as the game goes on, let's say heading down the stretch, if there's a bit of a gap and we're awfully have to empty a bench to get a kick, you know, I think Waterford can match that and exceed it. So I'm going to go Waterford by 6.
Fair enough.
So that means, it means Wilder the winner. So it means you can't be caught.
So Will's not changing his bet. He's going to go stick with Waterford
to win. Yeah. Okay. Again.
The only way he'd do it, Murphy, is if he went against you on both.
And
don't get me wrong. I thought he'd go for Offaly. I thought he'd go for them.
I would love to go with a Hail Mary play and say, you know what, actually, I think Offaly are going to win. And then next thing they win, and I'm like, well, what a genius. But no, I think Waterford will win that game. There is one other question I just want to throw at both of you, and I think you're going to end up doing your League 15s on the members pod. So that's something for those who are members, or if you want to use one of your free listens, we're crucially, a few people messaged me over the last few days and said, look, I use the three listens. So if you sign up on the Off the Ball app, you can have three listens a month. So you can pick them strategically. If you're like, I really need to hear what Paul Murphy's League 15 is going to be, use one of them there. If in a couple of weeks' time, if teams kick the shit out of each other on Easter weekend, use one of your free listens there for the members pod. So you've got your choice if you want to do that. I wanted to ask this one, though, because I know that Catherine Coughlin is always very busy when we premiere, with comments, that is, when we premiere or we live stream. So Catherine has said, and Scale, you can take this first, I am a concerned Limerick supporter. Have to admit, I was hoping for more from the new lads with all the time that they've had in the league. I asked myself how many of them would have been picked on the Limerick team of 2 or 3 years ago. Not seeing it at the moment. We praised their panel depth, and we praised some of the lads coming through.
That's an interesting
twist on the question, though.
We did, like, so new players will always thrive better when the best players are around them. So if you put in one or two new players into a settled team of 12 or 13, they will pick up as per the surroundings. Let's say they'll play to a level, or I won't say to a level, but certainly up to a level of their peers. If you put in 5 or 6, then quality drops and there's more focus on the individual as opposed to the team. She says she's worried. Slight concern is the way we termed it. I think last week, the week previous.
Yeah.
Slight
concern. The word concern and then backed away slightly, but yeah. Concern.
Yeah, and then we're still pinpointing the fact that they didn't have their full availability, their full complement. They never really got kickstarted into the season because they had challenge after challenge in terms of personal availability, whether that be through injury, suspension, or other. So I don't have huge concern at the moment. I have a little concern, but I still point back and I keep referencing this game over and over again. The game they played against Tipperary in the league was extremely impressive.
Yeah.
You know, so the potential is there. And I say, when you talk about potential in Limerick in the same sentence, usually the potential comes to fruition. It usually comes out. And if you click them by... Them guys are different animals too, to be fair. Like if you put them into Munster Championship mode, you know, they'll click into it. But are they as strong, let's say, from a neutral perspective and the outside looking in, are they as strong now as they were last year, years previous? The answer is no. Like, it's no. So there's no two ways about it. It's no. Like, they were conditioned like animals in a couple of years ago. No injuries, maybe one or two. Whereas now we see a small bit of cracking, you know. And that's just going to happen because they've been through war after war after war against every team, because every team throws the absolute kitchen sink at them. So I think if I'm a Limerick supporter, I'm looking at it not with as much confidence as I've had in years previous, with a slight bit of concern and hopeful that they just pick up where they left off in the championship of 23.
All right. Murph, you're taking it before we finish up.
Yeah, look, very similar. There's a few variables that you can't even come to mention now at the moment. Like, if a few things don't go Limerick's way, they'll find it very hard. Like, you know, if you have a few main players picking up injuries there, and we've seen them over the last few weeks, like, you know, if the Sean Finns and Mike Casey's and these stalwarts are picking up injuries, those are things we can't quantify at the moment. Mm-hmm. If that happens, it's so much of it can nearly get taken out of your hands, and they find it very hard to build momentum there. And it could just be a case where you get a bad run for the year. Like, they may completely turn this around. And I'd say all three of us, if we were to say, will Limerick turn this around at the moment and get going, all three of us would probably say yes. Yeah. But there is still a chance there where, and I would use us as an example, like, you know, we won the All-Ireland in 11 and 12. In 13, we just couldn't kind of get going. We just faltered a small bit. We had a few injuries. We couldn't get momentum going. And it was just a snapshot for that year. And then 14, 15, we were back fine again. But it was just a case that, if you can't get momentum and you can't keep the players on the field, and, like, again, the case in point that I said about Tipperary there, I say for Limerick, you know, if they enter a very arduous Munster Championship now, and as Skell was saying, there's a crack at the seam there, there's something, like, that'll get pulled apart in Munster over a series of a few weeks. You might get caught the first week, but a few weeks later. So those are the few things where I would be saying for Limerick, I'd be going, again, not worried. You'd be kind of going, I have a concern here. Yeah. The next few weeks will tell a lot in terms of, if we get more players back in the field, I relax. If we don't, there's a little bit, that'll be cause for worry then.
Yeah. I think in meaningful fixtures, Limerick have done really nothing wrong over the last while. They were beaten by a better team in an All-Ireland semi-final last year. They were looking at personnel. I think that was the goal of this league. I think it was about finding a couple of players that could be slotted in, as opposed to trying to win it or trying to do particularly well in any individual game. And I also think that the personnel, to Catherine's point about some of these lads maybe not fitting in compared to the team of 2 or 3 years ago, a lot of the regular cast could well be back in their position by the time the Munster Championship starts, even though lads were looked at. I'm sure they've been managing the load on some of these players. John Cuddy knows a lot more about where Declan Hannan is at than we knew during the league, or the reasons that he wasn't playing. Again, Darragh Donovan didn't get a huge amount of time, but played right at the very end of it. Looks like Kyle Hayes is going to be available to play now when Championship comes around. He knows more about where they're at than we are. And whatever they do in the Algarve is going to be work to probably just be tapering in nicely out of the league for the start. I think they'll be fine. Mm. Don't be too concerned, Catherine, is my message here.
And even if you are concerned, you have enough. Jeez, you have enough one.
Right, we'll leave it there for the main pod for this week. The guys are going to be picking their League 15s on the members pod from this week as well. Paul Murphy, thanking you, sir.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Skell, hopefully you're getting two stones together and starting a fire there.
Yeah, a bit of flint is what I've learned. I'm some Riverdale, lads.
There you go. Thank you. See you next week, everybody, for our review of the league finals.